You're listening to Ruining It for Everyone with your hosts Maggie McPhee and Christopher Harrington. Episode 5, Unsanitary Bag of Hurt. Yeah. So welcome back to Ruining It for Everyone. We were on a bit of a hiatus, holidays and all. Lots of changes, at least for me. What did you wind up doing for the holidays?
I ruined it for everyone. No.
What did you do?
I didn't go anywhere. I stayed here in town. My family's kind of, all the kids are older, and my mom's been dealing with family stuff, so she was like, no family for me, thanks.
Oh, well, that's not so bad.
Yeah, it was good. What'd I do? I tinkered a lot. I started building that motion control camera I was talking about, or motion control camera rig that I was not joking about.
Oh, yeah, no, I saw the pictures. Those are brilliant. So what camera are you going to attach to that? It looked like the rig was not large enough to hold a DSLR.
No, I could probably make it hold a DSLR, but that wasn't what I was going for. It's kind of a size for maybe a GoPro.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
I'm actually designing a little mount to make that I can 3D print and to put the GoPro on the tilt servo.
That's very, very cool.
That's fun. I think if I get worked out, I might build a bigger one. I'm moving into I'm getting my own shop space next month.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned that. So cool. Is that going to be your own space, or is that going to be a portion of like a larger hacker space?
Yeah, it's a larger space. I'll have like 50 square feet, but the place is awesome. It's huge. It has welding bays. It has, make and take welders, machine, metal shop, a wood shop, a little bit of everything. It's really awesome. I'm so excited.
Nice. Does it have a CNC machine?
Yes. Oh. They just got I can't remember which one it is, but a large bed CNC.
Yeah. I need things. Billet.
Yeah.
I need to buy aluminium in blocks, and I need to carve things. Ooh. Is it in Cambridge, or where is it?
It's not far from my house, really. It's a longish walk, short bike ride.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. What have you been up to?
Good gods. Well, I got sacked. That sucked. Yeah. So that really sucked. And so backing up, I'll use the term sacked synonymously with let go or made redundant or what have you.
Right.
The end result is the same. Yeah. I don't have a regular gig. Although that said, even after I was let go, I wound up working and doing billable stuff more than I have in the last 3 months, which is quite lovely. So I'm not actually hurting, which is really lucky. I mean, right now, there's such a huge, huge push for mobile app development and mobile web app development. And being a user interface designer who specializes in this sort of thing, I'm pretty in demand. And so when I made the official announcement on Twitter, there were a handful of people who within, 10 minutes of me tweeting that said, yeah, we should talk. So I wound up talking to all of them. So that was a lot of fun. So life is good. I've got some things in the fire as well that I'm not quite ready to talk about yet. But when things do finalize and papers are signed and such, I will certainly let everyone know. Cool. Other than that, aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the show? I didn't really do much for the holidays either. But tonight's episode is about 3D cinema and how incredibly horrible it is. 3D in the cinema. We remember back in the old days and, in the 1950s. Well, okay, we don't remember because we're a little bit too young, but we certainly remember that it existed and they used, an old red-blue anaglyph technology. And that's the 3D that you're sort of used to with the red and blue lenses on the glasses, and usually black and white films that had, you know, little blue and red stripes on them. And when you put your glasses on, things that were colored in a certain way would appear either forward or back on the screen. And then we moved up to a polarization, which will come in two flavors, both a linear and a circular polarization. And it's basically a filter in front of your eyes that will block out a lot of the light, so that your eye is actually seeing two different images on each eye, or, you know, a different image in each eye. And then those are two different passive styles. And then we've got the active shutter, which is also called eclipse, which actually uses an electronic motor to activate liquid crystals inside the glasses themselves, which is synchronized via an infrared beam inside the cinema and inside the auditorium.
Right. People who live in places where you have an older IMAX or OmniMax probably remember them. They are the E3D. I remember them from the OmniMax in Portland. Are these enormous things you put on your head? They have very large lenses in front of you, but they weigh a lot too. So, yeah.
Yeah, they were really heavy, and sometimes they didn't work or they didn't sync properly. Expand, XPAND, with various capital letters strewn about randomly. That's the sort of the common active shutter style. It's less common in the cinema these days because they're expensive and they break easily.
Right.
And you know, people were leaving the cinema with them, not necessarily because they wanted to steal them, but, you know, it's very easy to pop them in your pocket by accident and leave.
Oh, but not the E3Ds. These are head mounted.
Oh no, those were gigantic. Yeah, those were head mounted displays.
Right. The expand glasses you could pop in your pocket because they look kind of cool, actually.
Yeah, they were kind of neat. And the electronics were small enough. They were still a little bit heavy, though.
Right.
I remember watching one film with them, and I really hate the active shutter style glasses. So that's one of the brands of the active shutter style. The passive shutter style, which seems to be like the common, you know, the common case in cinema these days, I guess the most often that I see is the Real D, which uses a circular polarization.
Right.
They're the really cheap Buddy Holly glasses that you get. They are theoretically disposable, although I guess some places do try to retain them. And then I guess they sanitize them and bring them back or what have you.
Right.
And then there's the Dolby 3D, which is similar, but it uses what they call spectral comb filtering along with polarized glasses. But the polarized glasses are a little bit more expensive to produce. They use a dichroic lens. I believe what they do is they wind up putting a second color wheel in front of the DLP, and each one of those color wheels is slightly out of phase with each other, and the dichroic lenses pick up or basically filter out that very specific wavelength. And so it's the same image given to each eye, but you're perceiving the colors, the color space differently, and that gives you your depth.
Right.
Which is, you know, it's got some pluses and minuses, but I don't think I've actually seen the Real 3D. The Dolby 3D.
I have.
In a cinema. Is it good? Does it work well?
The time that I remember, I didn't. But oh well, it's like comparing crap with crapola.
There is that.
They're slightly different when you put them on, and if you put them on and you look at the screen when it's not 3D, it's kind of weird. They're a little bit more woozy making in that respect than the Real D. Wasn't particularly good, I don't recall. But you know, the Real D is not particularly good either.
Right. I mean, the thing I mean, Real D, as far as the 3D effect is concerned, I think the 3D effect is, it's not bad. I've also noticed that films that were filmed in 3D, meaning, you know, stereo camera, tend to have a better 3D effect than things that were created or interpolated into 3D from a single camera.
I agree. I mean, but, you know, it's like, I think I've said it before, that Coraline in particular was very good in that it was shot for 3D, and it made more use of the depth of space, not the stick something in your eye space, which Up did as well. Also very good in 3D. But then again, I mean, you're sitting there in a theater with glasses on your nose. And if you wear glasses, well, you're doubly screwed.
I didn't see Up, nor did I see Coraline in 3D. Because of the whole brightness problem with 3D, I tend to go for the 2D representations, unless I know for a fact that it's filmed in 3D. But with in the case of Coraline, I wound up not seeing it in the cinema at all. And so the Blu-ray and DVD versions are 2D. But although I think maybe they reissued it with, I guess, the advent of a lot of the 3D televisions.
Yeah. Well, there is a 3D disc as well. I have that where you get glasses with it, but yeah, whatever.
Oh, it's Anaglyph or?
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the problem with the Anaglyph is that everything is red and blue, right?
It's so not you can't... bad for what it is, but it certainly... I started... I watched a little bit of it and then immediately just flipped over to the 2D because it's just like, this is not worth it. Which I think really is a lot of people's basic point. It's just not worth it.
Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing... So I saw Tron in 3D and in real D, and which I think really is the best, probably the best technology that's out there. But again, like you mentioned, it's... You know, comparing crap to crapola, it's still not good. And part of the reason, of course, is that it's significantly dimmer because you've got multiple polarizations going on. And to couple, you know, so in order to do real D with a single projector, there's a polarizer on the projector lens, which obviously you're blocking out 50% of the light. There are polarizers on your eyes in the form of the glasses, so that's another 50% of the light. And then the screen itself, of course, is not going to reflect all the light. In fact, they want you to have this super, super shiny silver screen on Real D cinemas so that even more light isn't lost. Right. So what winds up happening is you wind up getting about 25% of the light initially projected into your eyes, which makes everything really, really dark. And Tron was a fairly dark movie. And what wound up happening was it wound up being so dark that it was unwatchable. Not to mention the film was pretty crap. You know, the overall brightness level was so awful that I didn't have a good time, you know, and it ruined the experience.
Well, coupled to that with, you know, the bulbs and projectors are expensive, so cinemas try to cut corners by running them at, you know, less than optimal brightness. So,
yeah, they're running them at half brightness or three quarters brightness to begin with.
So that 25% is 25% of what you usually get, which is not 100% anyway.
There doesn't seem to be any sort of THX-like certification for 3D or even, I mean, we can talk about this a little bit later, or even IMAX. You know, IMAX used to mean something, and nowadays it decidedly doesn't. But sticking with 3D, everything becomes so dark and so dim, and also if you have amblyopia or if you have any other sort of eye... problems, what have you, you're not necessarily going to see the 3D effect you're meant to see.
As simple as one eye being stronger than the other can really color your experience. I will say that, talking about the whole, you know, comparable to THX thing, when I saw Avatar, I guess the theaters where I saw it had, you know, been gotten the word or been read the Riot Act or something. Because it was clearly running it at a higher than normal brightness. So Avatar, when I saw it in 3D, was pretty good. But because I took my glasses off and I could see that it was very bright, which was, you know, it's a theater that I usually go to, and it was clear that they were doing it on purpose. So just screw those guys.
Yeah, really. Yeah, but I also think, you know, because, you know, Avatar... James Cameron, you know, he's a big stickler for that sort of thing. And if I imagine if you get a flagship screen, you will be directed to do a certain thing a certain way by these directors. You know, for example, you know, to bring it back to Star Wars a bit, which will actually be re-released in 3D I think this year. Not the original trilogy.
For it.
A lot of the cinemas, Lucas demanded that they move to a digital projector, and he also demanded a 7.1 surround system.
Right.
You know, without that, you were not allowed to show the film.
Although, in fairness, you know, considering the resolution that the movie, first movie that it was shot at, and then the resolution of the projectors, you really didn't get a lot out of it.
No, I mean, because those initial projectors were 1K projectors.
Right.
Which, you know, imagine, you know, the equivalent of your tiny little 1024 by 768 projector, DLP projector in your office. You know, that's roughly the equivalent. I mean, yes, it's a little more complicated than that, but that's basically what the first projectors were. They were incredibly low resolution, where when you saw the credits roll, you saw giant pixels.
Right.
And you saw smearing.
Yeah. And if you're really lucky, you saw scan lines.
Oof. Yeah. Well, that's the other thing that gets me too, is that a lot of the digital projectors are DLP based. They're not LCOS based.
Right.
And if they're DLP based, they very often have a spinning color wheel. I am prone to seeing the rainbow.
Yeah. Sorry. I shouldn't say scan lines. I should say stair stepping, because it's not necessarily scan, but go ahead. Color wheel.
Oh, right. I'm very prone to seeing the rainbow, the color wheel rainbow. So if I tilt my head, or if I move my head, or what have you, I see the rainbow trail, you know, projected on screen, you know, just due to persistence of vision or what have you. And that's, I hate DLP projectors because of that. The earlier projectors were much more prone to that than the more modern ones.
So DLP makes you taste the rainbow.
Indeed. Mm. So backing up a bit, so DLP basically uses bajillions of tiny mirrors to focus light that go through a color wheel that spins at some ridiculous RPM. I think the modern ones are around, 10,000 RPM or so. I'm sure someone in the audience has the actual number. And that's how the image is projected. You know, you get your red, your green, your blue. And it happens so fast that you see all your colors based upon that. The problem, of course, is that if you do move your head, or if you've got some sort of, you know, eye brain problem or what have you, that isn't normal, you'll wind up seeing rainbow trails on fast moving objects inside the scene, or if you move your head a lot, and that's just unacceptable. The newer ones tend to be a lot more stable. I think, what did I see? I saw Hugo. And that was on a DLP. I saw rainbowing a little bit, but only if I moved my head very rapidly to the right or to the left. Otherwise, it was pretty okay.
Right. And right now, I don't know, people have noticed that a lot of theaters have suddenly just all installed DLP projectors, places that were all 35 millimeters. So 35 millimeter is kind of really being pushed out. So, like, for instance, even the local 5 screen here, which is in Harvard Square, which is not big, it's all DLP now. I mean, I think they still have 35 millimeter projectors, but or whatever projectors they had before, but now they have DLP in all the cinemas, including the little small ones, screens. So,
are they? Do you know the resolution of the projectors or?
No, I don't, but I did see MI4 there at one of the medium screens, and it was pretty good. It was really good.
Nice. Yeah, I saw MI4 as well. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. It was Brad Bird.
I did too, yeah.
Yeah, Brad Bird, right on. Yeah, it was a heck of a lot of fun. I saw it in IMAX, but I saw it in, and again, here's going to, well, I'm not going to do it yet. I saw it in my local IMAX, which is decidedly un-IMAX-like. But yeah, no, I thought it was, well, the fact that it was 2D, I think that helped. You know, it was big, it was bright, it was fun. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And that was certainly on the DLP. I don't know if my projectors locally are 2K or 4K, but they're decidedly not 1K projectors. For the longest time at the Metreon, there was one cinema that had a 1K projector up until like last year or something. Mm-hmm. And it was appalling, you know, because here you are paying, you know, X amount of dollars for a ticket, and you're seeing possibly the crappiest image you can possibly get off of any real cinema. It was so dreadful. And because I never remembered what number, what cinema number it was in, I got kind of screwed a few times. So that was deeply unfortunate.
So we're clearly going to get to the IMAX thing, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about more about the difference between 3D as shot in 3D and versus the 2D interpolated 3D. There was one film I saw not too long ago. Oh, you know what it was? Thor. I saw Thor in 3D. Not the best of films, but it's a comic book film, so I don't expect much from them. But did wind up seeing it in 3D. It was fairly dim. There was no point for the 3D. Like, it didn't add anything. It was just 3D so that you can get more money into the box office.
That brings up an interesting point. Sorry for interrupting, but
oh, no problem.
Several people I know that say that they didn't really care for Thor, that I thought would like it, but I saw it in 2D and liked it fairly well. So.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was okay, but I mean, again, I rate it in the comic. It's a comic book film,
However,
it didn't suck like Green Lantern.
I have a theory or a hypothesis that perhaps
does it involve bunnies.
No, this involves being Thor. I think there's a possibility that the 3D actually hurt Thor, that it actually detracted from it enough to color people's perceptions. That's just the idea I have, and I have nothing to base it on.
I think that's possible. I didn't think the 3D detracted. I just didn't think it for me, it wasn't an immersive 3D film.
Right.
It just didn't, it wasn't there for me. I could have taken off the glasses and had a perfectly fine film. There was nothing that brought me into the film. There were some effects, but they were few and far between. It was almost as if they gave us all 3D glasses, but then showed us the 2D version of the film. I mean, it was clear that didn't happen, but I mean, it may as well have been that. It was just not good. But one of the trailers, it was for a Disney film, a live action Disney film that involved great apes in Africa or something, some rainforest or something. I can't recall. It was shot in 3D, sort of a adventure documentary type of thing. The trailer was so amazingly immersive. It blew my mind. I was like, I need to see this. I need to see it in 3D. I was really impressed by it, to the point where, to date, to date, I hadn't really experienced a 3D film that I enjoyed or wanted to see in 3D. I mean, Tron was a total disaster on all levels, especially the 3D level. I figured, they could have done so much with it, and they failed miserably. And Thor, turned out to be flat, basically flat. But this thing looked really, really great, and it seemed to be that it was filmed in 3D. They certainly decided to push that depth in a very, very big way. Oddly enough, I didn't see Avatar in 3D when it came out. I only saw it in 2D because I knew it would probably be fairly dim and I wanted a good, bright cinema experience, despite the fact that that was filmed in 3D. So.
Yeah, if you were going to go see something in 3D, it might as well have been that.
No, sometimes I don't think things through. But and now, well, actually, I believe they're going to reissue it.
Yeah, they're about to reissue Titanic in 3D as well.
Yeah, I'm going to pass on that.
Got to have everything. I would pass anyway.
Okay, so we may as well talk about the IMAX rant, because it's inevitable. So IMAX used to be something that was few and far between 70mm film. So that's it's basically medium format film, a film that's much, much larger than your standard 35mm. So you're going to get an amazing quality that's projected onto a screen that is stories and stories and stories tall and so wide that, it quite literally envelops all of your peripheral vision, and it's super bright and super wonderful. Yes, it's expensive, and usually it's, you know, sort of documentary short footage because the film stock itself was very expensive. And so, you know, the film may be all about penguins, you know, or something like that. Oh, I saw the Shackleton. They had a Shackleton film all about his boat and the wreck, which is utterly fascinating, but only about, I think it was under an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's because everything was too expensive.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's very expensive to film it, and it takes a lot of work to film it because you can, you know, the frame's so large that you can't. A lot of film is not a long time, you know. So,
well, that, yeah. And the cameras are incredibly heavy. You know, you've got the film stock again, which is super expensive and really large and really heavy. So if you're doing all these on location films, you've got to bring so much more equipment than you would at a normal, you know, normal 35 millimeter shoot.
Right. The Arctic camera they use for the Arctic, it can only shoot a minute at a time. So,
I mean, and
it needs to be light. So if it's light, it can't hold a lot of film because, again, the film is enormous.
What they produced, even though it was a fairly short time frame, you know, it was stunningly beautiful. They really pushed what they could do with that format. It was really amazing. But now it seems that every tiny local, you know, multiplex has a quote-unquote IMAX, but that IMAX that you get is not that giant peripheral vision screen. It is not showing 70 millimeter film. It is, there's no more standard anymore.
Do you know why that is? For those who don't. So the problem really is just one of branding. There is IMAX and there are OmniMax. Or OmniMaxes are like super hyper IMAX. OmniMaxes are usually the dome. And then there's IMAX, which can be anything from the dome to just the gigantic curved screen. And then, once upon a time, IMAX people teamed up with probably Christie, or it was either Christie or Sony. And
they use Christie projectors, so yeah.
I know. But, so they came up with the Digimax. And but yeah, so basically there's two 2K Christie projectors running simultaneously, which sounds like it would be great, but it's not.
But it sucks. The
because
yeah.
A 4K projector looks better than two 2K projectors. So period.
Yes. I mean, you get increased brightness, which is lovely, and it really does help, but you're not really increasing resolution. But you are increasing brightness. So,
and then, like you said, there's no standard for the screen size.
Right. So that was the other thing as well. You know, standard IMAX is roughly 1.44, which is closer to television, which is 1.33, you know, like a 4:3 television, right. Like the old school standard definition, versus most modern films are 2:35:1. So they're very, very horizontal versus vertical.
Right. And if people don't understand why that is, it's because the real IMAX completely fills your field of view. So up, down, left, right. So being square is an advantage until you throw it on a smaller screen.
Nowadays, you know, the quote unquote IMAX or the digital IMAX, you wind up seeing more cinema traditional aspect ratios. There are a few exceptions. You know, obviously there are some older IMAX screens, proper IMAX screens, that will show modern films, but which still have the 1.44 ratio. But again, you know, the Digi IMAX is usually the same aspect ratio as any other cinema, so it's 1.77 or 1.66 or 2:35:1, 1.85.
On a system that was designed to do 1.44. So.
Right, the projector itself, because it's the double sort of tandem projector thing, which is also a little bit weird because that, you know, that can go out of alignment and all sorts of other things. The traditional 70 millimeter film is a, you know, a standard 15 perforations. So that is roughly 12,000 pixels by 8,700 pixels. Whereas the IMAX digital is roughly 6,120 by 4,500, which is obviously a significant reduction in resolution. And keep in mind that 6,120 by 4,500 is really kind of faked because it's actually two 2K projectors. 2K being, you know, if I recall correctly, actually, the 2K projectors are measured on the vertical axis, as opposed to in print, where a 4K slide or a 5K slide is actually the horizontal dimension. But in this case, the 2K is in the vertical dimension.
And keep in mind, too, that you're not... So when they play these widescreen movies, they're not stretching anything out. What you're doing is you're cropping off the top and the bottom.
It's not anamorphic, and they're sort of they're unsqueezing it using a lens. They're actually merely cropping. So you're not even getting the full resolution there. And so what you wind up having is, if you do have a really, really big IMAX screen, but you're using the digital IMAX projectors, you wind up having pixels the size of your head. And that's really just not a good experience. There are some out there, though, that seem to be a higher resolution. I'm not certain of this. I can't corroborate this. But for example, the IMAX in the Metrion seems to be a fairly high resolution. I could be fooled. I don't know what it is offhand. But it seems to me to be brighter, higher resolution, clearer. And I don't see any stair-stepping, any aliasing, any obvious low-resolution trademarks on that particular screen.
I should backtrack before I say this. When I was about to say some IMAX theaters, but really what that means is IMAX didn't say... They didn't say, we'll sell you an IMAX, a Digimax, and you can't call your theater an IMAX. They didn't say that. So basically these theaters bought this IMAX digital projector system and called themselves an IMAX. So IMAX didn't say, no, to be an IMAX, you must be this. So which is where the problem comes in. And my understanding is that there are some 4K IMAX, digital IMAX theaters. That's my understanding. I don't know that for certain, but so.
Oh, like a true 4K?
Like a single 4K projector.
Interesting. Yeah, maybe the Metrion is one of them. They used to be, although the Metrion used to be very, very Sony oriented. And if I recall correctly, the IMAX projectors are actually Christie projectors.
Right. But at one time, IMAX was looking to use the Sony SRX.
Sony.
Did I say Sony? What?
Yeah, the Sony SRX. Yeah.
Yeah, they were looking to use the Sony SRX for the four to do the dual 4K and to upgrade. I don't know that ever happened. But so I don't know. Who knows?
We're talking about the lack of standards, and that's you know, in contrast to the THX concept, where you are going to be THX certified, it's got to meet certain minimum criteria. And if you don't meet that, you don't get THX certification. Now, granted, there's a lot of, you know, money and cost involved in that. But you know, going in, if you are at a THX certified cinema, you're going to get a very, very good quality image and sound and general experience, other audience members aside.
Right. And when people think, you know, oh, I'm going to an IMAX, they think, you know, I'm going to an IMAX. So it's got to be totally disappointing for some people to go, oh, that's what IMAX is? That's not, you know, that's not great.
It's incredibly disappointing to me. So I live in Greenwich, Connecticut, and next door is Portchester, New York, and they've got a Lowe's multiplex there. And one of those screens is an IMAX screen, and the IMAX screen, the quote-unquote IMAX screen that's there, isn't even the largest screen in the cinema.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is a little ridiculous. They have quasi stadium seating. The other thing about IMAX seating is that it's almost vertical.
Yeah.
You know, in traditional IMAX, because the screen is so gigantic, and also the stereo or I should say the sonic imaging is also different. If you have a normal, for example, if you have a normal cinema, the mixing sort of assumes that you are going to be more or less dead center in the audience. That's where like the prime mix is angled. But if you are at a traditional IMAX cinema, the sound is actually better if you're further back, almost to the back wall. And I don't exactly know why that is. But it is, from what I understand. I thought it was kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the whole semicircular dome concept, you know. So it is, I think, in a lot of places targeted. I always try to get that about mid, a little over midway up center in a, like a real IMAX, especially a dome or a large curve. It's, right. Yeah, because, I mean, and if you've ever seen a true IMAX when the lights are on and you can see through the scrim, the place is loaded with speakers.
Oh, yeah. You've got drivers like basically blanketing the screen.
Right.
Which is fantastic. And they do that. They tout that, you know, it's a big feature saying, you know, here's your wall of sound. They do a big rigmarole, at least to the Metreon in San Francisco, which is sort of my go-to cinema when I know I want to watch a big thing. I'll actually plan my excursions to San Francisco around cinema events that I want to see at the Metreon. And yeah, and if it's an IMAX, you know, they go through the whole, you know, it's a big song and dance and dog and pony light show. They backlight the scrim so you can actually see behind the scrim. And so it lights up all the speakers and right. their whole sound system there. They'll do a funky sound mix where they will target what appears to be, you know, sound coming from the upper left and the lower right and behind you and above you and, you know, all that sort of thing. Right. Not to mention the countdown that they've got, which even though it's in 2D, because the screen is so massive and it fills your entire peripheral vision, it feels like it's 3D.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a different sensual experience because...
Yeah, I mean, it's full immersion at that point, which is amazing. But it's precisely what you should be getting in an IMAX experience, but you're not getting in a lot of these, you know, quote-unquote IMAX experiences. I think, you know, it's probably too late. It's trying to stuff the toothpaste back into the tube. but I think IMAX would do right if they... basically went back and said, you know what, going forward, if you want to use the IMAX brand name, you've got to have certain minimum criteria.
Right.
Well, you know, your screen size has to be X and all that.
Yeah. The other rumor is that Christie makes a 4K projector. Another rumor is that they will start upgrading to dual 4Ks, which would be better.
IMAX is actually creating a camera for filming IMAX films. And I think that's going to be available in... maybe it was supposed to be available this year. This year being last year, 2011. But I believe it will be available sometime in 2012. Or at least that's what I casually read a while back. So I don't know if that came to fruition or not.
This is an IMAX camera for rental, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Versus... let's build a special made one for everything. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, no, this is the equivalent of a Panavision.
So that Catwoman can ruin it. Didn't they had a crash with an IMAX camera, I think, on the new one.
Oh, wait, there's a new Catwoman?
Yeah. And the new, really? The new Batman movie.
Oh, in the new Batman film. Oh, okay. I thought there was a new, rebooting the Catwoman.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Oh, thank the gods. Okay. I was getting a little worried there. I was like, no, sorry. That was really awful. They really don't need to reboot that. You know, because they're rebooting Spider-Man and it's like, really? Do you need to do that? Didn't we just have a film like 3 years ago? Why do we need to reboot something like that? A little bit dreadful.
Today, before we started, I sent out a tweet and asked people to tell me what they thought about 3D, whether they hate it or love it. And the vast majority of people replied, don't like it. They find it either just annoying with the glasses. Mostly, I think that was the most common complaint, was the glasses, or that it just doesn't add anything. And I fall in that camp. I've stopped going to any 3D movies. Now I will seek out the 2D version unless it's something, you know, like if Avatar were about to come out, I would go see it in 3D because it was all about 3D. So whatever. But
right.
So I've basically just given up on 3D. I didn't go see Hugo in 3D, although I know it's supposed to be, you know, a very nice 3D, but I went and saw it 2D and I loved it. So I'm happy.
I'm in a similar camp. I'm not really sold on the 3D. Again, mostly because the glasses are cumbersome. I don't wear glasses normally, but wearing them the thing I get is reflection. I can see the light of the projector in the glasses themselves. That is incredibly annoying to me.
And it's doubly so if they leave the work light on up there.
Exactly. So you wind up having, you know, this horribly bright distraction when you're looking at a scene that's probably fairly darker than it should be. It's distracting and you lose concentration. And again, that immersion is gone. You know, 3D or the cinema experience in general should be immersive. You should sit close enough that the screen is more or less filling your view. You should, you know, sit more or less centered so you're not skewing your perspective too much and the sound mix isn't too wonky, too far back, and you're not going to get some of the delay on some of the sound effects or what have you isn't going to sound quite right. If you're too far back or too far forward or too far to the left or too far to the right. So you kind of want to be more or less dead center in a non-IMAX cinema. But the glasses drive me to distraction.
And I think that's a key thing, though. It is a distraction, and it's not something that a director can plan for. They can say, well, all right, doing too much 3D right here would be distracting and might pull someone out of the experience. But you can't control the distraction of the reflected light. The glasses are slipping down your nose, or you're just not in the right position at that time, and suddenly you're pulled out because you've got to deal with these things.
I'm not particularly germphobic, but I'm not particularly thrilled about wearing these glasses that, yeah, they came inside some plastic baggy thing, but I don't really know where they've been. They don't feel particularly clean. You know, I kind of don't want to wear them in general. They're kind of disgusting. And so why, you know, it's just a hassle. And again, it's the distraction thing. It's one more distraction, right? You know, if people talking on their phones and texting and all that bollocks isn't enough, now you've got this giant bright light shining in your eyes that's reflected from, you know, the booth rather than from the screen. And also, in general, yeah, the 3D seems to be more or less an afterthought. I wound up seeing Hugo in 3D, and that was probably the only film I saw that I actually really liked the 3D. It did seem to add a bit of an immersive quality to it without going overboard. They weren't doing a lot of effects where purposely had, you know, long pointy sticks that would, you know, try to stab the audience or anything like that.
The worst.
I mean, they had a few. They had the one scene where all the papers fly out and it was so very obviously CG and slowed down, etc. That
what was funny is seeing it in 2D, I saw that scene you're talking about, and I knew that was for 3D.
Yeah, that was very obviously put there solely for the, oh, it's, you know, magical surround snow type of thing. That I thought was pretty crap. But Hugo was such an amazing film, and of course the automaton that they had, they actually built. That was real.
It was lovely. It was absolutely lovely.
That blew my mind. I assumed, because, you know, everything is CG these days, it doesn't make it necessarily cheaper, but assumed that it was CG. And as it turns out, it was a practical.
Well, I think in that case, the practical just would make more sense. And, you know, a lot of people think no one makes practicals anymore, and we've discussed that, you know. But I think in this case, it's something that there are plenty of people out there who could build this, so.
Yeah, well, the thing is that not only was it a practical, but it actually drew in real time what we were watching. That wasn't even a trick. They figured out how to make it draw that drawing. There was a video that someone linked, and I wound up relinking it all over Twitter and my LiveJournal and all that sort of thing. And it completely just blew me away because I didn't realize that it was real. And I have so much respect for people who make practicals. Not that making virtual items is easier or anything like that. As a matter of fact, although in some cases virtual items are made possible because they're virtual.
Right.
The just practicals have a lovely warm place in my heart. And this particular figure, it was a character in the film as much as any of the other actors and actresses. And it was really just amazing to see it. It was real.
I really enjoyed the film as well. I think I may have tweeted this afterwards. I don't know if I did, but I've definitely moved it up into my top list, not my top film, but in my top films list. I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I was going to say, if anyone hasn't seen it, definitely go out and see it. Go to your cinema, figure out if it's a good one, if they're running the ball, but, you know, half power or something like that. Definitely just watch it in 2D and be much happier about it.
Right.
Otherwise, yeah, just amazing, amazing film. I'm also looking forward to that Disney film that didn't seem to have a launch date.
Yeah, I couldn't find it. I just did a quick look and didn't find the name. But I think I recall seeing, not the trailer, but seeing like a something online mentioning it. So.
So where can we find you?
You can find me at MaggieMcPhee.com. Or on Twitter at TANKGRRL. You can also see my webcomic at sakuremu.com. What about you? Where can we find you?
Let's see. You can find me on the Twitters. That's probably the easiest place to find me. I'm at Octothorpe, OctoThorpe. You can find me at localtype.org. I desperately need to amend that blog. It's been several months since I've updated it, but now I've got some free time, so that's good. Again, I am taking contract work, so if people are interested, by all means get in contact with me via Twitter. We'll arrange something. Life is good. Other than that, it has been another episode, so see you all next week.
That was another episode of Ruining It for Everyone with your hosts Maggie McPhee and Christopher Harrington. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod. You can find us at ruiningitforeveryone.tv or search for Ruining It for Everyone on iTunes. Be sure to subscribe and rate the show as it really helps us out.
Hold on to my metal moo moo and we will get away from here.